On this episode of On the Line, we are speaking to John and Vinny,
a couple of guys known as much for their great personalities as they are for their culinary artistry.
They have John and Vinny. You knew their famous restaurant, Animal. They have Son of a Gun. They do everything. And if you've flown on Delta, you've probably eaten their food.
John and Vinny have helped to put Los Angeles on the world stage of great culinary cities.
I am so excited for you to listen in to talk about this dynamic duo and their partnership. Yes, a successful long-term partnership in the restaurant industry. It is rare that we have two people on the line, and it is rare that a relationship lasts this long.
John and Vinny's restaurants span the spectrum from fine dining to red sauce comfort. Welcome, John and Vinny on the line.
Okay, Dan's going to give you an illustrious introduction.
Yo, I've got a single-spaced full page that I want to read about you guys.
So get ready. He wrote it
all the bad things, I hope, that you've pulled off a line.
I'm also doing something that I think has never been done before for the first time ever on the line. We're inviting
two guests.
But we still have a single seat, so we are inviting Vinny Dotolo.
I don't know, whatever you want today, you can do.
And John Shook, and I'm going to say their names like that for the first time ever. They're going to be backwards. It's Vinny and John. Yeah. Has anybody ever heard you guys like that?
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It doesn't work.
And actually, technically, Grammarly, it doesn't work because you're supposed to use the first letter, the first name in the alphabet. So that's why.
So this is the whole theme of this whole letter right here, is that these guys are like these kind of easy breezy, fun loving, stoner guys that, you know, you're like, oh, they're kind of best friends. But yo, don't sleep and don't underestimate them because they're sharp as a whip. And there's a method to the madness inside that, inside those, below those hats and behind those beards, ladies and gentlemen, are a couple of fine smooth brains.
Am I the only one without a beard in the room? Right now?
So now that I've been corrected for my grammatical
mistakes.
Thanks for that. Vinny and John met at culinary school in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Became fast friends and traveled via detour in Colorado to sunny Los Angeles in search of their version of Biggie's 3 W's: surf, sunshine, and great food. I was trying to be cool because Biggie, he has the wine, the women, and the weed or something, the weather, the women, and the something. Los Angeles has a long and rich culinary history with tons of amazing restaurants featuring best-in-class examples of food from all over the world, but at the time when these guys first got out here, and I'm not trying to be a dick, but kind of like London, Los Angeles wasn't known as a great food city. And I'm not passing judgment, but personally. But if you ask most chefs in 1998 about the food in Los Angeles, they'd most likely say great tacos, great sushi, couple great red sauce joints. It's not like a culinary shithole. There's that Providence place in Spago, but it's not a great food town. And we take for granted that today Los Angeles is this world-class food city, and there's an argument for the narrow-focused, like xenophobic judgment of food being, you know, to blame for the city's lackluster reputation back then. However, there's no question that the food scene has grown exponentially in the last 20 years, and it begs the question, how does a place evolve to where it is today so quickly? And Vinny and John...
or John and Vinny.
Or John and Vinny... play an important role in that transformation. So every great food city has something that makes it special, like sets it apart, a signature that makes the place distinctly of that place. And in Los Angeles, it can be argued creativity is the thing that makes it special. Like LA is a deeply creative place from a food perspective. Angelino restaurants are not mired in tradition. There aren't established, long-standing, definitive best practices. Real estate is relatively plentiful and reasonably cheap.
Used to be.
We could talk about that. This is so long that I've lost my place now. Which allows folks to take chances. You can like kind of still afford to take a chance in LA, which is special. And in 2008, Vinny and John, I wrote it backwards. John and Vinny took a smallish place on Fairfax, and they absolutely crushed it out of the park with a spectacular, game-changing restaurant. They were true to themselves and built a place where they'd want to eat, with music they'd want to listen to, treating their staff the way they'd want to be treated. And they threw away the pretense and the tablecloths, and they put their money on the plate. deeply creative food that hadn't been put out there until then. At the same time that David Chang was chopping it up in New York City with fancy food, hip hop, and graffiti, Vinny and John in New York, John and Vinny were doing the same thing out here in LA. And I remember my brother taking me to Animal, and I ordered the chicken fried quail, and I was so jealous that they had the balls to cook the way that they did. And I was so excited that it was working, because it was a game changer for the industry. And it was a big inspiration for me and continues to live in my memory as one of those special restaurants with the special energy that is obviously way bigger than the sum of its parts. And I'm only one restaurant into their empire. So I got a couple more pages. No. So without taking more time or blowing more smoke up your asses, I can sum it up and say that they've gone on to open, I don't know, like 10 or 12, 15, 1,000 more restaurants.
Yeah, we've opened some, closed some.
Yeah.
Drawn inspiration from around the world, partnered with, mentored, trained, worked alongside countless chefs and managers and restaurateurs, started and supported countless careers. Their mark on the Los Angeles dining scene is indelible. And if you talk to anybody, they're universally known as genuinely great guys, which is wild. From the outside looking in, it seems like you're having a great time doing it. And you're bringing a lot of joy and a lot of happiness to a lot of people that you work with and that you feed. It's really something special. And they're the first people that I reached out to when I moved to Los Angeles, and they graciously shared their advice, support, and connections. So thank you. Because it was like coming to a new city is
really
daunting.
Yeah.
And we've never spent any significant time together, but I've been following you guys. I've been following along. And so thank you for all the great meals and helping me get to where I am and helping build a world where I get to cook the way I do and for being here.
Yeah. Thank you.
Nice.
That means a lot. I think I can just leave now. I'm gonna get up. Anything I'm gonna say is just gonna damage that.
You guys did something special.
That's not true. That is not true.
Not to mention your footwear is unbelievable.
Oh, thank you.
Sex. Thanks. What is that?
Oh, shout out to the row.
Oh my god. What is that? Is that like a? It's like a.
They're eel, actually.
No.
Yeah.
I was gonna say. Eel. I was going to say
alpaca. And they're Italian. I mean, they
make... Vinny's talking about bringing a full-on three-piece suit back.
Yeah, no, I don't know. No.
Three-piece suit.
John's making stuff
like
that.
You can do it.
I can. I can do it.
He's going to evolve it back.
Yes. You know, I saw on Instagram that was like, yo, with, you know, what's stopping you from working like that, like dressing like that? And the comment was like, you know, because I don't work as a valet in an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
Well, that was an amazing introduction.
I wore last week the same pants for a week straight in the kitchen. So
it's okay. These pants?
No, not these pants.
Okay.
No.
I was going to say,
a pair of Carhartt work pants, and I just changed my t-shirt and underwear and socks, and that was it.
You're a fashion icon.
Can I say one other thing? Sorry to just
no.
one other thing.
No, yeah.
Yo, there was a point. I was listening to a conversation with you guys, and there was a point in your career where you were like, kind of going down the Food Network world of, and I don't want to disparage the Food Network at all because I think it's great. I'm a fan. But you were kind of like going down this world where you were asked to be a little bit corny and maybe not be yourselves.
Yeah.
And you had the kind of you like steered away from that. Mm-hmm. And man, it must be challenging to be like, yo, I finally get this dream. I get to be on TV and get to, but they're kind of asking me to be corny and I don't want to, and it's not who I am. And you guys had the wherewithal to steer away from
that.
I mean,
I think our dream was to own a restaurant, right? Food Network was just our path to get there.
Right.
Because when you're out there and you have a dream of opening a restaurant, trying to get somebody to give you money is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it was an opportunity that approached us kind of randomly through doing catering in LA, which is obviously the capital of show business. And it spawned into a show. I would say that it doesn't necessarily best reflect who we are and what we were then.
What year was
now.
That? Was that 2006?
It was filmed. It was filmed in like We were hunting it like down in probably 2004 and five.
Wow.
And then, and you know, we were being taken to the Food Network, MTV, all these other places. And it was, but I think part of that journey and that path that John's talking about is sort of, I think part of the whole thing is kind of knowing what you don't want and what is not doing well for you or not serving you or any of these things. It's like, and to get to where you want to be and where you think you should be, sometimes you have to go through that stuff.
And also we were kids, right? And like, you know, we, as much as we thought we were in control, we were so far from being in control, being in that kind of organization. And like, once you experience that feeling, if you're someone like us, you know, you pull back. So we pull back naturally. And I think that actually probably gave us the juice to get to here. Right. And it's like,
sometimes those experiences don't come out like you think they will. You're like, oh yeah, I'm going to take this TV opportunity and this is going to lead to blah, 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 blah. And then you realize like, whoa,
or
you pull back and you're like, okay, now I'm going to refocus in on my other
or
stuff.
Or if you would have gone the other route and done what they wanted you to do and not been so resistant. I think like because of our age and the time that it was, what it was going on, I think in our life and in our head, I think that played a factor in it, in why we didn't want to be different. We wanted to be ourselves,
right?
And we didn't want to be something that they wanted us to be. And we could have really capitalized on that opportunity to like be whatever they wanted us to be, and kind of do the show hands thing. And like, you know, we just kind of resisted and we were like, no, we don't want to do this. This is what we want to be. We actually offered the money back to them while we were filming the show. Yeah, we did. We were like, this was so much,
we don't want
so
to do
painful.
This.
We
regret that we did.
Oh, wow.
It was deep.
It was painful. You know what I mean? And I think,
and it was called Two Dudes Catering.
Yeah. And the name killed us too.
Yeah. Like, well,
Two Dudes, you know, One Pan.
That was the cookbook. Two Chicks, One Cup.
Bring it up. I was like, yo,
bring it up.
Fuck, dude.
We told them.
We showed them the video. We're like, and that's the thing where it's like, even to this day, right? Oh, it's like, God, people ask, oh, why don't you guys do television? We hardly ever even do podcasts. You know, we're more private than public facing, even on our social accounts. I'm sure you guys.
I was just going to ask you about that.
On that. Yep. And like, there is a value to private that you can't explain, the value that it gives you, you know? And I think that we're already in the spotlight enough between, you know, we're close to almost 800 employees right now.
I was going to ask how many
the organization,
employees.
You know, and different companies that we're affiliated with. And like, you know, it's hard to please everybody and like what is accepted, what's not accepted. It's challenging, you know? And that, then you get kind of in that reverse of like, okay, well, maybe I should have just sucked it up and
No, you guys did the right thing, but like to be okay.
Well,
to
there's
be,
no right or wrong, and that's what I was trying to get at.
Well, you were maybe you were in your 20s when that happened.
We were in our mid 20s.
To be able to know yourself well enough in your mid 20s and say, I don't want this. Actually, take the money back. I want what I had in my mind, and I don't care what I have to do to get it. I don't want this TV thing to get it. Like, most people would be like, I'll take it. I'll get sucked in by the TV thing because I need it. And you guys really knew what you wanted. You like stood so strong on that. And I think that's why you're such a success.
You need to have these situations happen in your life.
Yes.
Right? I think to be able to know like what you really want and what you like and what, you know, and I think, look, if we were going to do television now, there'd be only one deal. Right. We're in control.
That's right.
We didn't crave. I don't think we craved the celebrity or the fame from it. We wanted to just be able to make stuff.
Sure.
And like making it like what's funny about it is actually the pilot episode was actually fun.
Sure.
And shit happened and it was unhinged and it was like it was like what it should have been.
Of course.
And then they took it back to him and they were like, what is this? and then it became torture. And I think like we knew we're coming out of it though. Like we knew when it all kind of happened and it dropped, we were so sort of embarrassed by it and like embarrassed by the book, embarrassed by the show that
we're still embarrassed by.
We wanted to show the world.
Don't worry.
I think at the moment we wanted to show the world who we were then, and what we were then was animal.
Right.
You know, and that's what we were. And I think like we were just these kind of like, you know, aggressive, you know, young cooks who were willing to just like grind it out harder than anybody. Like, we worked with people that were just as talented as us, more talented, you know. It was like, but they weren't willing to put the work in. They weren't willing to stay dedicated. They weren't willing to stay focused, and we were.
Yeah, you know, and that's, we were fearless.
I think that that's where we surpassed people, was that, you know, we worked next to people all the time. I was always so impressed by how good they were in the restaurants we were working in, and always was like, I'm not this good. I wish I could be this good. And like, you know, but one thing that separated us was that we were willing to put the work in and to get there and to go harder, go longer, put more hours in. It was like, even in school, it was like, most of the kids that started school with us didn't finish. You know, it was like we went through school and did the 18-month program and finished in the 18 months.
Yeah.
It was like we were determined. We were determined
and
together.
And you're also, when you're doing something that's innovative and cutting edge and new, you have to stick to your guns. Mm-hmm. Like Animal was. Like, it changed everything for every chef around the country right now that's doing anything even similar to that. You guys paved the way for them. And I know that sounds super cheesy, but you did. And I'm sure you hear it all the time.
We did. We were just being ourselves.
Yes.
And that was the most important thing.
You know
and
how we were, hard that is to do, though?
No, I do.
To anybody listening, I think that's really important for what you just said. Yeah. Like, you were just being yourselves. You know, especially now, like, we're almost luckier. Back then in like 2008, 2007, we didn't have all the social media eyes on us. We didn't have that kind of pressure,
that scrutiny
around us, you know, and we could be a little more creative and artistic and wacky, you know, and we could lay that ground. And now I think there's so much pressure to compare and despair and look at what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
It's so hard to be an original anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is. And
it is.
I think it's about you guys as one of the originals that like really laid that ground. And the fact that you're still doing it and still doing it successfully and you're still in partnership with each other is fucking fascinating to me.
Yeah.
What do you think that's like something I failed at so many times, right? Mm-hmm. Being in a partnership with somebody and then losing my, it's the respect thing that always gets in the way. Like, how do you guys get through the day? Disagree? How do
we respect each other? But I think we're deeper than that. We're like, we're a bond that, like, I always say this too, is like we had the same trajectory.
Right.
We were in the same place when we met each other. We kind of came from a similar background.
Financially as well.
Financially, like everything. It was all, we were just equal. And we treated each other as equals all the time. Do we agree all the time? Absolutely not. That'd be the most absurd idea ever.
Yeah.
That would be, when people like,
and that wouldn't even be interesting.
But honestly, we both have to agree to do something. That's how
really?
It yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, for the most part.
I mean, something. They could be like, oh, I'm going to go to the art museum by myself or something like that. But I'm saying as far as like business decisions, like, I like this location. I think we should put a restaurant here. I like this deal. Like, do you like it? Yeah. All right, cool. We're doing it. Or, you know, this is a person I think we should promote. Or
do you guys know. Like, you cross over though so much and there's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your career also changes as your company evolves, right? Now I would say, Vinny and me play more of like a CEO role, co-CEO role. You know, we have fabulous, you know, corporate chef, corporate team underneath us. They do a fantastic job, pastries as well.
Are you guys like, when you have a tasting with this like corporate chef person, are they, can they kind of do their thing or are you guys?
No. No, it's, no, we.
We're very involved.
No, we're very involved. And I think like that's the thing. At the end of the day, it's like, We're still cooking through sort of like our own lens and still like, you know, with each other's tastes and in mind and like sort of trying to create in that way. But no, there's no chef that is like, this is what we're doing, kind of leading the charge on things.
How about the front of the house? Or is it the same thing where it's like
Helen's very involved in that.
Yeah.
She has definitely a lot of say in the front of the house direction.
And Helen is the woman that you own Helen's wine shop with.
Yeah. And she's a partner in John and Vinny's. Yes. And
she started as a general manager at Animal.
Yeah, like maybe that.
Oh,
maybe
then
she
moved,
did?
Yeah, then like, moved to director of operations as we sort of evolved and had the partnership with Ludo.
So
and,
she's been with you that long?
Yeah.
She's been with us since Animal since the first year.
Yeah. We were open for about a year. Where did Ludo come from? How did that all happen? Like,
what the, you just came from kind of random. We were at lunch together. And
I worked at La Lingerie, by the way, for Ludo.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
he fired me after 3 weeks.
Tell our listeners who Ludo is. Tell everybody.
No, Ludo's a legend. Ludo's a legend. Ludo's one of the most talented people I've ever worked with. And
but you guys are done with that.
We're done with it. It's you know, it's like
Ludo was in Los Angeles. He was a great cook. You guys knew him, and he needed a restaurant.
Well, he was doing Ludo Bites.
Yeah,
he was doing Ludo Bites, and he was kind of moving around, and we were sort of like trying to convince him that he should have a permanent home and say like, you know, like people will keep coming to you. It's like just
and at that make point you had available. A couple restaurants, so you had a little bit of dough, and you were able to support.
We
that.
Had yeah, we yep. had we had Son of a Gun and Animal at that point, and we were sort of.
I had the shrimp toast at Son of a Gun. I remember when that shrimp toast really blew me away.
It's still good.
That.
It's still Son there. Right still now. There.
Jordan Oaken, you know that guy?
Yeah,
he made a shrimp toast on a sesame seed bagel I had fairly recently, and it blew my mind. It was like one of the most delicious
things. Sounds similar to
I love a shrimp. I've never been a love shrimp toast.
I think,
to be honest with you,
I think Gabrielle Hamilton inspired me to do the shrimp toast. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, who's she? Yeah.
I beat Bobby Flay with the shrimp toast.
So you were like, you guys helped him to set that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we set up Twamek with him.
We were part of it. Helen helped open it. She was kind of the director of operations,
Ashley Ragavan, who
was there,
who owns
Doug Rankin.
Yeah, Doug Rankin.
He's you know obviously had his great path here in LA as well.
So you guys now? As partners decided to bring somebody else.
In Pasadena
and one more time, somebody. Sorry.
You guys as partners decided to.
I think we got into
somebody.
This point in our career. Yeah, you know, your career goes through different paths, right? And it's like we were at this path career where it was like we felt like with Animal and Son of a Gun, we had figured out a formula that we liked, and like we started producing other chefs.
Right.
We're like, oh man, I remember how hard it was to get money and like all the things. So it made sense for us to do it. And like we did that for a while. And you know, COVID obviously hit, and you know, you start to decide what's important to you, and you know, you start repositioning where you want to go and what you want to do, right? It's like your life is like flashing in front of your light in your, it's like
you
every
reassess.
Day is like
yeah.
intense. You're trying to figure out how to stabilize a business so you could maintain your staff, and you're trying to manage your family life because your kids are out of school, right? They're now being taught at home. So, and you're being told you're going
to
die.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Danny Boy's Famous Original Pizza from downtown Los Angeles and Westwood, Los Angeles. Danny Boy's Pizza started with a singular goal of producing the best slice of pizza that we could possibly create. We make New York-style pizza with the finest ingredients, built by a team of fun-loving, like-minded, culinary-driven individuals, producing slices of pizza that are not going to empty your wallet, but they will fill your belly. Come down to Danny Boy's and say hi. I am on the line. Cooking them up for you, as well as on the line with Amanda Freitag here in the studio for you.
Right. Like, basically, if you're in the world,
everything.
You're going to die, you know, like without a mask. So it was like we were out there and, you know, I think you just change courses, you know. And so when with Ludo, that an opportunity came up with him, and then obviously with the Kismet team, something, you know, an opportunity came up with them, and we were able to all kind of part ways. And
oh, so you're out of that too. That's
yeah, we're out of
yeah, we're
so you're focused on
we're John pretty much focused on John and Vinny's. That's like our path right now. Yeah, we just opened one in the Middle East last week.
Where in
that
the
is
in
one
Dubai?
Of my questions.
In
Saudi
Riyadh.
Arabia.
In Riyadh.
Yeah. Well, in Saudi? In Saudi?
Yeah, in Saudi.
Oh, so wait a second. What do you do about the pork thing?
There's no pork.
So what do you do about
veal.
Like the
meat? We make like chicken sausage. We made veal, meatballs,
use,
chicken.
Use chicken.
The chicken over
there
is better than chicken in America.
I would think
we use
so.
Veal
it's
instead
so good.
Of pork. We sell because veal is affordable there. It's not like it is here. You
it's
know.
Like baby cows. Just like half the time to
it should
raise
be
them.
Half the price. but here in America, it's the
it's the opposite. Yeah,
it's
the
beef.
So use veal for the
case,
texture,
yeah.
and then the use. Wow, that's wild.
Yeah.
Now, so Saudi, There's definitely no, you're definitely not smoking any pot in Saudi.
Definitely not.
Straight to prison.
Definitely not.
No, I have a separate suitcase. I'm like, oh, I got to go over there.
Yo, straight. No, you got to keep it classy.
But, you know, the Middle East just as a whole, Dubai, you know, the group we're working with is based in Saudi. And they the MJS, but they do Mr. Chow. They, you know, they started Earth Cafe over there. They do Black Tap Burger, just a couple American brands that you guys might know.
But a lot of people were over there.
Yeah.
Really?
Carbone's there. Jones is there. Jones on third.
Yeah.
Cipriani. What's his?
Cipriani's there.
Cipriani was there? No, I think.
I went to Cipriani the first time over there.
And Nancy Silverton?
There's Chispaca. Chispaca over there.
Wow.
Chispaca.
You know, there's a lot of American brands. You know, there's Gymkhana from London's there.
You also start to realize how...
It's an amazing place.
Well, not how small the world is, but also how media can dictate your perception of places. And, you know, until you go over there, you know, like anything in the world, until you experience it yourself, you shouldn't have a preconceived, you know, opinion, even though we're all, as Americans, told that we should.
Agreed.
It's happening right now.
There's more similarities than differences. Yeah.
I love that you're saying that.
It's a beautiful culture.
Too.
The people are amazing.
Yep.
The place is amazing. Visually, it's so different than what you're used to.
And they built a John
is closer to California than Kansas.
They built a John of Vinny's like to spec. I mean, if you've been to the restaurants, you know, like the materials are very selective, and like we try to carry that through line with the brand through all the stores, and it's like literally, it's a identical John.
When we were in there last week and the music was on, the food was coming out.
You were like, standing up where you were for a second.
You're just like, I'm at home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, also the amazing thing is how many people, I would say 70% of the people that came in the first week told us that they lived in Southern California over the summertime.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, when you start, and that's where you start to realize like, you know, LA is a metropolitan city. It's definitely has reached like, you know, a handful of other cities here in LA on a global scale. And it's, where can you go with this brand? You know, it's like that has taken over our lives. And I think that's where back to like when COVID and stuff, it's like, okay, this is our opportunity. Like no matter how many ideas we come up with between now and the time we die, we probably will never hit like what happened with John and Vinny's time wise when it came out. Cause it's not the idea. It's also when it comes out.
Yeah, you got to talk about the tale.
It's got to come on the time, you know, so it just turned 9.
And wow. It just turned 9. So it's only 9 years
old. Thank you.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we got 4 open in LA, opening a 5th in June or end
of
May.
Where's that going to be?
Studio City.
That's the best. Studio City. Everybody wants to be in Studio City.
Yeah.
Very cool now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're opening Studio City. And then we have obviously the Middle East happening now. They just opened their first. They're trying to open a second one early next year.
Any other global expansion?
Not yet.
We're looking. Did somebody listen? Come on, give us a call.
London's on our radar. You know, Japan before COVID happened, we actually were talking to a few people in Tokyo about it, and then it just like, you know, Tokyo, Japan closed up for a couple years, and it just kind of cut
just
those
the
conversations
coolest
off.
Place
but
on the planet.
I would love to just do it, just to be able to go.
Yeah,
you know, and like it's. But, you know, now I think the Middle East and the Gulf region's open to us. And, like, I would say the other cool thing about, like, making something and then have accepted, like, so on such a huge scale is, like, that feeling, it was just so incredible of just, like, regardless of how they heard about it or where they came from, if they lived here, didn't come here. There were people that had been to California, hadn't been back in 10 years. Whatever it was just that, like, these people were interested in what we were doing that far from where we originally did it is like, you know, I imagine it's what it's like for an artist to play a concert somewhere like so far from home and so far from that original little idea of where you do it. It's like
someone was asking me about ASCAP actually this morning. And I was like, it's the one bill that I'm like happy to pay. You know, it's like all the artists, it supports the art of music and like in restaurants, we're playing music. It's like, it's the one that like I'm not angry about.
Of course.
It's a very important part of the energy of the restaurant. You know, I think the music and the vibe and like
always,
it's everything. You know, it's like in the end of the day, like what we're serving is Italian American food. And it's like it's pizza, pasta. It's a little bit like we consider it like a diner. You know, it's because we do breakfasts and it's things that people know. It's just the totality of it all is what makes it, I think, for people something that they want more of.
Course.
You know, I think it's
so you're like young guys, you're in California, you open this animal restaurant, you want to eat funky food, you want to drink great drinks, you want to do that. And then you grow up a little bit and you're like, yo, I got a kids. I want to eat spaghetti and meatballs. I want to be comfortable. I want to, this is the type of food. So very much like where you are right now.
Exactly.
So if you imagine yourself in like 15 years,
I mean, I already kind of...
What's the restaurant going to be? What are you...
I mean, I would say for us, one thing that we haven't done that we've always talked about is opening a hotel.
Oh.
You know, so that would be something maybe in 15 years we would do. But who knows? I mean, right now, it's like I think I'm trying to find myself a understanding of paying attention to my kids. You know, so it's like I'm working. I'm dedicated to work. I put in my hours, but I also like... It's important for me to try to be at the baseball game, you know, for my son, right? Like at the dance recital. Sure. It's like, because you're never going to go back and capture it. Where that takes me, I don't know. You know what I mean?
I agree 100% with what he said on that. I mean, I think the same thing.
Yeah. I think
that like deep down and creatively, like there's always that stuff that's just kind of like eating at you, you know, you're like, I want to do this. And like, I think like if I had the time and I had the money, it's like I would do, there's 1,000 ideas I would do, but it takes great teams of people to do it as well. And I think like building those teams, it's like, you know, you think about, you know, watching sports teams and how they like, how they have to try to build to be that championship team, you know? And like, I think we have built many championship teams and taken them apart. And it's hard to do.
Yes.
And I think right now we have this great team with John and Vinny's, and like we really want to try to see this thing as far as we can with those people. And I think right now what we talk about is that like anything that takes us off of that is really just a distraction and is feeding our ego. You know, it's like, I want to do an insane sick steakhouse that like doesn't exist in LA. There are good steakhouses here, but I want to just do it through our lens. And it's like, but I also know what that would do to us. I know it would take us completely away from what is really good for the team.
Is it time to like hire? That's my mistake is like, I'm always like, I'm in control. I want to do it. I don't want to let go. But, you know, I want to do something else and then I'm distracted. So at a certain point, maybe you just hire somebody to do it that loves doing that. You know?
We have those people too.
Yeah, but I was going to say, if you have 800 employees.
You can't really get distracted. Like, you know, you end up, you only have so much time in your day, right? And like, you can't do everything good. And it's back to television, you know, to where you started. It's like, you can't be a great chef restaurateur and be a great TV personality.
Right.
Right? Even Gordon struggles with it. And he's the best of the best.
He's the best of the best.
Emeril, all those guys. We watched all those people, you know? It's like, we grew up in the era of like Emeril and Mario. And it's like all those, like, influence. You know, they probably did it the best because they were, their restaurants and their persona on TV was like equally as good.
Exactly. They were dependent on each other. But then it
eventually started to erode. The restaurant started to erode, you know, and like getting to the people doing it and it starts to not become yours. Yeah. You know, it's like we've had, you know, we worked with great, I would say at Animal, the evolution of Animal is really, we'll go back to that because that was really where we started. And it was like, as we started to open Son of a Gun and we started to mature into having families and those things. And we started working with Ludo and it pulled us away from it.
Yeah.
So it did need people to kind of bounce the ideas off of, you know, it's like we worked with, you know, at Animal, it was like we had Mike Magliano, who's an insanely talented chef. He worked with us for a very long time there.
Yeah.
It was like the go-to guy that, you know, we'd feed ideas to and say like, hey, like here's the list. Let's do it. Present it to us. Let's taste it. Let's work on it together, et cetera. Same thing. Jonathan Whitener, same thing. He came in, did the same thing. He worked under Mike. They had worked together at Kraft.
He knew your style.
Well, it was easier to nurture the team, right? And now John and Vinny's is this thing that is like, it exists on this like bullet train, right? And like one little thing every single day is so much to try to, like, hey, like, let's make sure we're doing, we're going to start portioning.
Right, you have to keep it consistent. We're going to
start portioning the red onions for the pizza this way, right? And it's like that one thing to get that to be done over four restaurants and the commissary, it's a lot. Right. So it's like
giving me agita over.
No, but that's why you can't take your focus away.
But you can't let you can't just let people come in and just start throwing ideas into the system because it really takes away from what it is in its totality. Yeah. I think like
and
what
also, it is right now. As you grow it, you run into other issues. So it's not. Sure. I mean, it's just different challenges that you're working on.
Do you feel like you? I feel like you guys have a resume, right? Like you cultivated this resume, and now all of a sudden you're doing a job that you don't have a like. If you were going out to hire someone and be like, "Yo, I want to run a 6-restaurant chain," you wouldn't be like, "Oh, well, we're the perfect candidates for that because you're learning how to do that as you're going."
Yeah, we're not.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what's fun about it.
But you know the thing is too.
We're the bosses right now.
Yeah, we're not afraid of it. Like, we're not afraid of it.
We hated having a boss. So it's like if you bring somebody in and it's it's like that weird balance. I don't know. For now, if we could just kind of stay on course of what we're doing for the next handful of years and just focus on what we're doing, then
But when we talk about the partnership, you talk about the marriage and you talk about how you guys did it and you say, you know, we both always had to agree on something. And I think as that train started rolling, it was like, are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? Okay, let's do it. And like you guys just would look at each other, say yes, and then
you jump off.
And then you realize, okay, do we want to open 2, 3, 4? Like then you realize it's a different beast.
Yeah.
You know, it is where you have to keep the
right onions consistent. It's about the team. You know, it's like the team. There's been so many people that are part of John and Vinny's that have been there. Like the corporate chef started as a grill cook. You know, like he literally came up the ranks and like, could we go out and bring somebody that's run 20 stores and they would come with new ideas?
It's not the same.
Totally, it's not the same.
That's what fucked up.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's completely blew up the whole.
We got to learn together.
The whole entire restaurant. We were doing so well, and then we brought a bunch of people in, and the whole thing just.
Yep.
The culture took a shit.
Like, our CPA is always like, dude, you guys got to, like, step up your pace. I'm like, man, whoa, slow down, dude.
Yep.
It's not about fast. It's about. Yeah. Consistency, slow, thought through decision making.
Look at like Hillstone. They've grown over the years, and they do it so well. I think like I go in there and I'm always in awe. You know,
their
like,
training like program is spectacular.
Their training program, but it's interesting. Since COVID, you know, like I shout out to Hillstone. I eat there all the time, and I'm always watching. You know, and I can see that. I think that they've grappled with how good they've been,
right?
And like the lack of of people there willing to do these jobs now. I think that they've really sort of they you can almost feel it in there too, and you're like, oh, you guys are seeing this a little
bit. It's on
the
edge.
It's sort of like
it's a house of cards.
The industry has definitely changed since the pandemic.
But that's why you set a foundation.
Yeah,
you know what to do.
Yeah,
and that's why you can't like really release any of it because. Once you do, then it's out of your control.
100%. Yeah. And we're not ready for that yet. I think like we're not in the position to like, you know, even opening in the Middle East and opening in Saudi, which is a very far way away. There's
how many
people
hours
in there.
On a plane is that from
it's
LA?
It's basically a full day. It's like it's a 24-hour day. I mean, between like getting to the airport and all that stuff, but it's like. Life's full of many journeys, and you got to be willing to take them. Sure. You know, it's like it's amazing.
Garuti from Shake Shack, he was early on, and he had just come back from opening in the Middle East, and he was like, "We learned so much from the way they ran. They're such an amazingly well operated organization.
Yeah,
that we learned so much that it helped us to expand over here with their practices.
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting about John and Vinny's is that. It's very organized. Like when you're working on something at least 70, 80% of your day, every day for the last 9 years, and you're not changing the menu or changing the design or changing really anything, you're just trying to refine the exact same thing, right?
Yeah, it's like, that's a unique opportunity. Not every chef
so
can do
it's
that.
Like John and Vinny's is like, it's tight. You know what I mean?
So well,
like,
I mean, I think our
a lot
egos...
of our a lot of the issues that we're battling there are just like bringing supply chain to where our supply chain demand is, and what we are. So like we are shipping. I mean, Chris's tomatoes were using them over there, right?
No way.
Bianca DiNapoli. Wait, yeah.
Were you were sending them over yourself?
We are now. Yeah. We are still. Yeah. Yep. Wow. Yep. So he's got his cool can with the Arabic writing on the side.
That's
now.
Amazing.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah. I love that. But it's like even like the ice cream base is Strauss Dairy. So it's like just introducing new ingredients to a country is pretty cool to say that you did that.
You brought it there.
Yeah, we brought it there.
Wow.
It's like the first guy on the moon. You know what I mean? Like, you're the first person to brought Strauss Dairy.
That's a legacy and that's a learning.
Yeah, it's like, cool. That's like where my mind is now. I'm like,
bigger picture. And we talk about that a lot in here. What we've been wanting to focus on in the podcast is like, we are a different generation of chefs, right? You guys are the trendsetters, you're the icons, you're the OGs, but you know, we're constantly wanting to learn still.
Always.
Like,
yeah.
still like, want to learn. That's why we traveled. That's why you're doing what you're doing now. Like, you know, I remember when our mutual friend Nate Appleman took the job with Chipotle and everybody was dissing him and they were all like, you just won a Beard Award.
We thought it was so cool.
Right. And I just wanted to pick his brain. I'm like, how did you know how to scale up?
This guy
up?
Was like walking around with bare feet.
Stock, like, stock options.
Well, we were jealous.
I was jealous of Nate.
Right. Also, Nate also is like such a talented person too. That's a risk that takes.
He's going to Australia.
Yep.
It takes a lot of courage to do stuff like that.
Well,
you know,
that's it. And at that time, a chef that developed themselves to, like, you know, a James Beard Award winner. And
A16 was a game changer. Are you kidding me?
And highly regarded in the chef community. Yeah. And then they go to Chipotle, which everybody thought as fast food and lame. Yeah. And how do you do that? And he was so smart because he was teaching himself something that we never got to learn.
Yeah,
we
didn't learn that scale. We learned, dude, you learned how to ride that corporate wave.
How to make mise en place on a line and cook, and that's it.
Are you
have to learn
more.
Occasionally, it's too cold this time of year. It's just starting to warm up for me, so I'll be out there again in the summertime.
You surfing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I need a 3-4 even on the hottest day of the year.
Oh, really?
I like my...
We're Florida kids.
I like shrivel up in cold water. It's like, I'm like,
it's hard. Yeah. It definitely makes you more intense.
I'll be back out there. I'll be back out there for sure.
I also think that like the John and Vinny's thing, like, and why we haven't tried to do 100 other ideas as they kind of come about, you know, it is because that I think that John and Vinny's also satisfies us in the way that, like, in the restaurant in its total, that like it we love the design.
Yeah.
We love the food we make. We love the community it's built. And it's a viable business, you know. It's like all those things are satisfying.
And how rare is
that?
And it's like, and we love the team, but it's people want it on like a more regular basis than like what we saw was that like Animal and Son of a Gun and these other places we may have done along the way with and without other people were like they're so niche,
right?
You know, you realize how like. How they're used from the public, you know, like because restaurants essentially are public space.
User
and it's like
friendly.
It's user friendly. It's like it's for everybody,
right?
And I love that. I love thinking that this thing is like we made this, and it's like it crosses all borders, boundaries, anything. It's like it's for everyone. There's nothing there that you couldn't bring your grandmother or your boyfriend, girlfriend,
or your
whoever,
baby.
Significant other, partner.
Kids.
Right.
You know, it's really that thing. So it's satisfying to us.
I feel like a restaurant's like a house of cards and a puzzle. And it's always one like piece away from being perfect. And then the whole thing never really gets there. And when you get one that works on every level, you're like, don't fuck this up. It's so special.
Yeah.
And if you can keep on doing that and you can see how if you can manage to grow it without losing that, that's really, I mean, that's just that's the dream. Like, we all looked at it like, imagine you could grow McDonald's but not lose what was special about it.
Yeah.
When it started out, because when McDonald's opened, that was the coolest restaurant on the block.
Yeah. Still pretty impressive.
It's still amazing what they do.
Amazing.
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 Yeah,
you know, even In-N-Out, you know, In-N-Out makes all their stuff fresh. It's like,
well, they've got God on their side. I mean,
Start
praying.
Well, you see what it did for Chick-fil-A, too.
Yeah, it's working.
Okay,
on Sundays.
So I gotta go find them.
Going back to partnerships and going back to making that perfect restaurant, like you were just saying, like, the restaurant industry is notorious for having broken partnerships, bad relationships, litigious partners, investors that are assholes, chefs that are assholes, you know, whatever it may be. Like, what? There's very few people that have a partnership like you guys, like really very few. And I think, as you say, yes, we have to agree on everything, but there's got to be something more than that in a way that you kind of grew up together. You grew up in this industry together.
Yeah.
There has to be, has there ever been a moment where you're like, I can't talk to you anymore?
I need a week, I need a day, I need an hour. Argument is a healthy situation.
Have you ever gone to therapy together?
No.
But I think like the neither of us believe in therapy. But
the discourse is interesting, you know. It's like it's always like the conversation, the different points of view. And I think we value
the partnership.
Well, but agreeing and disagreeing, I think like we value both. It's like there's something there to at least talk about.
Right.
You know? And we fight. I mean, you know, the older we've gotten, the less fighting we've had, because you mature as individuals and you also know like what your other people's boundaries better than maybe you didn't beforehand. But you know,
the maturity, I think like you learn not to try to make it hurt somebody. Right. You know, I think like when maybe when you're 19 or, you know, 22, yeah, it's like you're not in control of your emotions as well.
Yeah.
I think also having kids is really helpful to us.
Super grounding. Yeah.
I mean, we've been working together 24 years.
What's the most time
you
spend apart?
Which is more than half my life. You know, more than
I think the most time we spend apart is like when we both go on like vacations or something like that. But other than that, like, I mean, like we were just in Saudi Arabia. We were 24/7. I mean, we're staying at the same hotel. Like, we wake up, we took the same car to work. We like we're at work the entire time. But it's like
doing positions.
Yeah, but it's like there wasn't 1 minute where we weren't able to tolerate each other. It was just like we knew that we had to go there and get shit done. And like, we both left there like, we didn't get to do everything. We did a lot.
And
that
I
was
think
amazing.
We both like, feel like a sense like you don't want to let the other guy down. You know, course. It's a family.
Yeah, it's a family.
More of a family than a business partnership. And I think a lot of times what happens just in business partnerships is like, it's exactly that. It's a business partnership.
I think there's a lot
of people. There's a relationship that is dictated by financial decisions and and usually whoever puts the money in has one view on the idea, and whoever doesn't put the money in has another view on the idea. And then there's people in between kind of that get equity or balance between each other. It's like we've always been 50-50.
Right.
Jealousy gets in the way. Money gets in the way.
Yeah.
Different interests get in the way. One person got a family. One person doesn't. Yo, I got to take money out of the business to pay for my family. I'm like, yo, let's keep it in and open another restaurant.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, but you guys have managed. It's a special.
Yeah. And like, you know what? I think if, because we both came to the table with nothing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we had nothing to lose and we built it together. At this point, it's like, you just look back at it and you're like, man, you know what's so fucking great? That I had somebody to experience this with.
Yes. Yeah.
And at some point in our lives, we'll sit down and we're going to write the story that brought us to wherever we're sitting right now.
That's amazing.
Right? And it's like, we're just not ready to bust a pen out.
It was interesting. You know? I just watched the documentary on Mr. Chow.
Uh-huh.
And he had this moment in there where he said, like, even if I lost it all, he's like, I'm okay going back to Zen, like nothing. I'm okay going back to the one pan, one bed, you know, one pot. And like, it really hit me because I was like, that's how John and I started. And like, knock on wood, we can have the success of Mr. Chow.
Mr. Chow.
Yeah.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Freitag Cocktails. I'm so excited about these. Freitag, that's me. Friday in German, hello. Friday's a great day for a cocktail. We make them in a family-owned distillery in San Diego. Chef-crafted cocktails, our own bitters, our own vermouth. We make Manhattan, Negroni, Margarita. What else could you ask for? Go to freitagcocktails.com, order them today, and they'll be delivered to your door. Cheers!
I disagree. It really sucks. As a guy that like really just put a bunch of cash in the bank and then lost it all immediately, it's not.
No, I know it sucks.
Keep your dough.
It sucks. There's
remorse.
But there's also that thing in life where just like you know, if you had to go back and rebuild it all, it comes from within you.
Sure.
You know, and I think like that's where it came. All of this came from inside of us.
Sure.
This all was like we put this out into the world, and like, the world was willing to accept it,
you know, and like that was that's the coolest part. We made these things that people liked, they loved, they took care of, they nurtured, they supported, and we did too. And like some things have an expiration date. Sure. Animal had an expiration date. It got to the point where it was like it couldn't be nurtured into a healthy state anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and it was like whatever you want to blame it on. The pandemic.
We didn't want to go back. Yeah. We didn't want to go back, right?
It's like that's when
that was in our past. That's you know, when we were ready, like
we did it.
You know, the fallback to animal was to move out of our apartment that we were living in and just live in animal if we couldn't afford both the apartment and the restaurant, right? So it's like that was the real fallback. I mean, what's interesting, and I'm sure back to your comment about having the money, losing the money, is that like people only know you from when they meet you, right? So it's like people that meet me now only know me from John and Vinny's. They might not even know Animal.
Right.
Right? It's like
– yeah.
And like people look call at us John with and Vinny's. A lot of John and
individually, you're like, no, I'm just Vinny Bart.
And like perception is, oh, look at these guys. They're rich. They got four John and Vinny's, right? It's like, I wish that was the case. You know, it's like they don't realize the debt what that you're takes. Carrying.
Yeah, we got a lot of
the
debt.
The risk that you are carrying in the time that it takes to pay back that debt before there is any profitability.
The people you're and how employing. Government
taxes that money at 50% here in California. So if you spent $1 million, you really got to make $2 million before mm-hmm. you're back to zero. It's like people have zero reality on what's happening with you besides how they meet you, right? That's so it's like put it on that's what's nice is that if and that's where you see, you know, like back to that privacy,
right?
It's like what's nice about John and Vinny's, even though it's called John and Vinny's, a lot of people don't even know who we are because we don't put ourselves out there, you know, because of that exact reason. You know, it's like I want that enjoyment that you have.
I cherish to
wake
the-
up and.
I cherish the friendships that I have, whether we still have aligned interests or not. People that can call you out on your bullshit, know who you really are, and can help to keep you centered. And you know, that's something that the fact that you guys get to keep that for each other is really very special. Mm-hmm. But I definitely highly recommend holding on to the dough.
Well, if everything fell apart today, we could all be line cooks.
If everything fell apart today, we'd be fine. Because I'm older than I expected to get already. Right. So I made it.
Yeah, yeah that well, too.
I would say this is one of the biggest problems in our industry is that there's really no path to retirement.
Right.
Yeah. And there like is that's not. Something that like for the past 5 years, I know Vinny and myself personally have talked a lot about individually. You know, you look at these guys, someone like Wolfgang, it's like, I know he loves what he's doing, but like, man, he should be like chilling. He should be
chilling.
Yeah, but he could be chilling. That guy's got $100 million.
I know, but he doesn't have to continue. But what is that balance? How do you separate for, it's like a drug. It's, you know, it's like
it's your identity.
In a restaurant, it's your identity. It's like, I watched Thomas Keller speak at a conference, had nothing to do with food. He was a random guest speaker. But the one comment that I took from TK was he came and hung his chef white up next to him, not on, but next to him. And he said he needs that there. That's his safety blanket.
Right.
Right. And it's like, how do we as restaurant operators, chefs, find that safety blanket in that comfort of whatever that golden year is for your life? Like, don't take this to the grave kind of vibe. You know, it's that's something I like, you know, that interests me at this point. Not that I'm trying to do it anytime soon because I got a long path to travel, but like, hey, you know, in 20 years, I don't think I could do this. I don't think my body, my mind, you know, could handle
it. We just sat down when we first sat down. You were like, yo, how's the pizzeria going? I'm like, oh, it's going really great. I struggle with the challenge of, you know, how much you pay your team, and your team is everything, versus how much, you know, profit you make to be able to distribute to the investors, because you need those people. And like, the reality is that at the cost of how much people are willing to pay for food and expect to pay for food, a path to retirement as a, you know, if you're a line cook, I mean, because you guys are at the, you know, you're at the top of the game. You're in the 0.01%. You know, you're at the very top. So it's like maybe the top 5% has that path, but you know, most of us that get into the world, we start cooking. It's like, do we expect to be in the top 0.1%? Yeah, that's the only fallback?
No. Some of that goes back to decisions that individuals make and like back to what you pay. It's like there is industry standard through the, you know, obviously California Restaurant Association that exists here in California that gives, you know, per zip code what the industry standard is based on the style of restaurant, and like, you know, using that as your guideline and then using what your target guidelines are on returning investment and what is the appropriate percentages, et cetera, is always how we've practiced. Mm-hmm. Everybody practices differently, but it's how we practice. But as a young cook, when I made $4.15 an mm-hmm. hour, right? I elected
big balling in Florida.
I elected to only spend $3.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, that's where people live out of their means. And like, we made decisions, and I think people are like, well, how'd you get to here? It's like, well, you don't know us from when we literally were sleeping on people's couches and we had one cell phone and one car, and like we
sacrifice
would walk because we didn't want to pay for gas. And like, we also saved a portion of every dollar we earned. So when we did have an opportunity, we were able to then do it, right? And I think that that's something that
but you constantly you took those that. Opportunities. Mm. You constantly looked for them and took them.
Still do.
And you still do. And I think going back to simply what you said, there's no path, you said, to retirement, but there's no path in this industry that anybody can actually follow. That's why I think it's so important to talk about your partnership, mm-hmm. because not everybody can have something like that. And we spoke with Chef Mark Forgione a couple of weeks ago, and he was just talking about it's enough to just want to be a chef in a restaurant. Like, because he's, you know, we're talking about what you have to be today. You have to be a chef. You have to be a TV personality. You have to be a media mogul. You have to have multiple businesses. You have to be global. You, wait a minute. Can I just be a chef if I want to be? You know, what is that path?
But you can be.
You can be. Right.
And people do.
And they're happy that way. And that's fine. Yeah. And there's the path has now changed again. Like, from the beginning of my career to now, like, I got to diversify. I got to do stuff on television. We all got to write a book. You know, we've got to travel the world. Like, what happens next? If some young kid comes up to me and says, I want to do what you did, there's no way I can say, well, this is the path you're going to take.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. You don't get the gold watch at the end of this. Like, it's not the same. So the path is ever changing. In one way, that's difficult because you can't really inspire and lead, you know, for that exact thing. But at the same time, I think it's fucking awesome that we can do anything.
There's more paths.
I mean, you can be in Saudi Arabia. I can sit on the plane back to New York and eat your meatballs.
Yeah.
Like, I can do all of this stuff.
There's more. I mean, I feel like the social media stuff is pretty amazing to me, to watch people that have a lot of talent that like make food on camera, and like they don't deal with what we deal with. They don't have the risk that we have, you know, but it's like, how do they maintain? I don't know. I don't know that world. I don't do it. And like, I'm curious. I would love to learn, but I'm not wanting to do it myself. But I like to just know. But like, how does one see themselves in 10 years?
Well, that's a very uncontrollable world. You're good looking.
You make cool food, whatever it is. It's interesting. It's healthy. All the things. Right. It's like whatever your angle is. But how does that sustain itself over time?
We don't know yet.
Exactly. We don't know. But it's a new path. Yeah. Yeah. But it is a new path. Like, it didn't exist when we were coming up.
That's right.
You know, that path of being a personality just on social media.
Sure.
They don't need the Food Network.
No.
You know, they don't need
you
all.
You make your own.
There's
a lot more viewership on YouTube than there is.
That's right.
TikTok, YouTube. I mean, you were talking about
in the beginning with Two Dudes Catering Show, like how great the pilot was. That pilot is something that could be done on YouTube today.
Totally.
And you could keep it exactly that way.
It could be on Food Network today. Just at the time, it was too edgy.
Yeah. I wish that was true. I mean, I think Food Network has their formula of competition shows.
They know
now.
Who they are.
They're not talking about cooking as much, you know, but maybe it could be on Netflix.
Their personality.
Yeah. The nice thing today their personality. Is that it's like a sifter. So the talent is going to rise to the top, and you know, lots of people will fall through, but there's opportunity for you to put yourself out there and get in every home if you want to. It's just, man, you got to have some confidence to really sit up there in front of the camera by yourself and be like, I'm great, watch me, I'm on TikTok.
People do
but
it.
Somebody could
people
pull that plug it. At any time too. It's like TikTok could be gone tomorrow, and then what is this person gonna do?
Yo, the Chinese government's taking it away. We're gonna be done.
That's
for
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So what happens to somebody who's made their living?
I think at the end of the day, it's like your career path will just continue to evolve. Same with ours. You know, it's like if you would have told us when we were in culinary school that we would be here right now doing this podcast, we probably would have said no way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I thought for sure we'd be, I thought maybe, you know, as a 19-year-old, I thought like we'd just be running a restaurant kitchen, you know, or chefing somewhere, but moving around maybe a little bit more than what we did, you know, like.
That was my only goal.
Yeah. That's all I really wanted to do was like, you know, food's kind of the international language of the world. It's like you kind of adapt to anything in any scenario in any place. And I thought like, oh, I might end up in Thailand at a restaurant or I might end up, you know, but. Still haven't been to Thailand, so
keeping that dream alive.
You gotta go. I mean,
we are traveling the world now.
You see my passport, dude. Yeah. It's getting
we're traveling.
Up.
We're just traveling through our lens now. That's right. It's kind of wild. It's cool.
Yeah.
And you're making your mark all over the place.
And I hope to do it for more people. You know, it's like that's kind of it's sort of
and create a path for people that are part of the team.
Yeah, your team is so lucky to have you guys. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what your Christmas parties look like, but it must be awesome.
Yeah, it used to be.
If they weren't in California and the liabilities, and they used to be off the chart. They used to be.
We can't have much fun anymore.
We run out like nightclubs and stuff, but you can't do that anymore. Yeah, unfortunately.
Back in the day where you could have a shift
drink. You also want to the culture you want to foster changes over time because you're like, yo, this is going to be really fun. But do I want to foster that culture in my company when really, like, you guys, you love to have a good time, but you're serious about making great food and hospitality and taking care of people. And, you know, partying is fun, but that's the thing that's
it's not professional.
And that's the truth is that what's seen you this far is that dedication and focus, caring about what you do. And those are the types of people you want working with.
Yeah.
And caring about your employees.
We try to run a professional organization across the entire board from A to Z, follow all state, federal guidelines, laws, you know, rules, regulations.
Yo, OSHA, if you're out there.
Come on over.
Our ladders are.
Come on over.
We're like an hour and forever into this thing. How long has it been? An hour? We gotta wrap it up.
Okay, so
got somebody else in the hot seat next?
No, you're like, we just want to be, you guys don't have anything, we went to Dubai, we got back. No, but okay, so
how's your brother, by the way?
Yo, my brother says hello and tell him I say hi. He's doing really, really well. Yeah, nice. He just had his 50th birthday.
No way.
Amazing.
Pretty special.
That's cool. Did you go?
I cooked.
Cool. Where was it?
I cooked at his house. I got man, it was such a special meal. I bought a punch of great food, and we made a special meal. It was really nice.
I love that.
Before we wrap it up, talking about the greatest partnership in our industry, John and Vinny, what's truly next? Like, is there something what's really next? I mean, we didn't get to talk about Cookbook Market,
thing on the roster is John and Vinny's in Studio City. I mean, that's the next thing.
Great.
I mean, it's kind of...
That's lucky for the people in Studio City.
That's what we're honing in on, and you know, we're super excited about it. I mean, we have a couple other things going, but until they're really what we've learned over these years is until they're really hatched, it's hard to promote, right?
Because I get it.
You change what you're into, what opportunities and paths. So it's like right now, the next thing on the hopper, we're trying to target before the end of school year. Because it's right near a school, so hopefully we'll hit that target.
Nice.
We're going. We have a meeting there on Friday to try our first bar stool, built-in bar stool for our new hard alcohol bar. That will be the first one for John and Vinny's.
Really?
That's
awesome.
Yep, and it's introducing a new material, which is green onyx.
Green onyx. Stepping it up,
dude. Green onyx. That's awesome, sick,
cool.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we still
made out of white oak and steel right now. They're built in, fixed. You know, we like everything fixed there. Yeah. So we don't wiggly things to wiggle. And we're testing cocktails, classic cocktails. Yep. Martinis, you know,
are back.
Yes, because we're also...
They never went away, but yes, they are back. Espresso martinis. That's what I'm seeing the most of right now.
Everything
I'm seeing espresso martinis everywhere.
Everything in John and Vinny's has to be, you know, be part of the recipe Bible, system, pictures, training, new training guidelines come out for the bar, new rules have to come out about drinking at work. Back to the drinking.
Back to the drinking.
So yeah,
that's a hard rule.
But there is the next thing. There's an evolution even within the John and Vinny's. Yeah. There's some yeah. evolution. Right. Also, you know, kind
started
of
started with plywood and you were a green onyx. Yeah, it's evolving.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
we never did the the original idea was to do Terrazzo flooring.
Ooh. Oh wow, so, that's my favorite.
And we just still
so
haven't crazy. Done it. We just still haven't done it.
We can only
we haven't gotten
Saudi. Come on.
No, I got a ramen restaurant.
They
got
to get the VCT tiles right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and it was an old Sears. And it's got a terrazzo floor.
Yeah.
And
I was just like, pink
it's
terrazzo.
It's got this green and white terrazzo floor. It's beautiful. But they also have they've got these fire department like discs that go up and down to the basement. There's metal discs on the floor. You can pull them out and drop a fire hose down there. Sick. And I was like, yo, we got to keep that. I don't know. They're like, why do you have to keep that? We got a grease trap downstairs. Cool. And the grease trap guy goes through the fire department hole. It's amazing. It's terrazzo floor.
Are you part of it?
Yeah. Got a ramen spot.
That's
in
cool.
Uptown Oakland. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Sick. Yeah.
So good.
I mean, look, you know, you always dream about building that, you know, perfect sick, crazy,
space.
I'm just going to waste money restaurant. you know, and if I was going to do that setup, it would probably have carpet on the floor. So I just feel
really?
carpet?
So
elegant. Yeah. You got, you know, with having carpet, though, you got to have a good carpet cleaner.
Carpet floors is like cruise ship level. That's very.
I
think a rug. A rug is quiet.
A big, nice, big, cushy leather chairs. Like, you know,
that's sexy.
Yeah,
that's.
I forgot where we went recently. That had carpet. Where'd we go? That
Ralph,
we like
Polo Bar. Polo Bar, in New York.
Wow. Yeah,
they're doing like $28 million like a night.
Yeah,
man, that room. You know what makes you so mad? You're like Ralph Lauren. You were so good at what you already did.
Yes.
For the world at
now
clothing
you're good at a restaurant.
And fashion, and then you do a restaurant like that that level. You're just like, oh, it's so frustrating.
But unfortunately, I'm going to be just on the VCT.
Got to make money to lose money.
That's okay. Well, listen, you guys are leaving a legacy behind. If you stopped everything right now, I mean, it would be. Something
we'd be happy if
for
we stopped
the rest
there.
Of
thank
our,
you.
That's what we were came to the podcast and that's it.
No,
but we want to watch you grow and see this partnership live on forever.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, the partnership could live on even without restaurants. That's what's cool about a brotherhood.
I just want you to screw up John and Vinny's because it's so delicious.
Thank you.
I want to keep on getting
you
there. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Don't
I don't
want to
screw it up either.
There's no chance.
Yeah, I don't want to screw it up either.
Thanks for having us. Good luck on the rest of them.
Thank you.
Guys, we love you so much.
Thank you. We love you guys. Thank you.
Season 2 of On the Line was recorded in Santa Monica, California at Operation Podcast. Thanks, Chase.
Our engineer and editor is Matthew Donahue. Our theme song is an original composition by John DeLucci. Thanks, Chef.
On the Line is produced by Cindy Augustine. Our co-producer and publicist is Jesse Gerstein.
Our social media and marketing guru is Kedzie Teller.
Thanks for listening
to On the Line.